Hello and welcome to the OneMSL podcast, a forum that seeks to champion field medical excellence through sharing a diverse range of voices from across the pharmaceutical industry and beyond. Tune in with each new podcast to stay up to date with current trends in medical affairs and enjoy fresh insights from our guests. My name is Helen Kane. I am CEO of OneMSL, a specialist provider of training and consultancy to the global medical affairs community. So Carol, I think we will start in the interest of time because we know there's a huge amount to cover. So welcome everyone to the OneMSL 2024 webinar series. So this webinar is really to coincide with the launch of our 2024 global survey, and we thought that it would be a fantastic opportunity to share some of the findings from 2023 with you all and some of the trends that we're observing. And I am deeply privileged to be joined today by my colleague Carol Heggie. Carol, welcome.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you. I'll just share a little bit about myself. So as Helen mentioned, my name is Carol Heggie. I am the Medical Excellence Lead at OneMSL. I actually wear two hats, and you may encounter me in places like LinkedIn also as president of an organization called iGen, which develop software solutions for medical affairs. My true belief is that we succeed in medical affairs, and especially as MSLs, at the junction of our skills, systems, and processes. So this is a love affair for me when we're able to talk about the feedback based on your needs and realities within your environments across the world. So thank you, Helen, for giving me the opportunity to participate today.
No, it's my pleasure. So for anyone who may not be familiar with OneMSL, who are we? I'm really proud to lead this organization because we are a truly independent specialist medical affairs training provider and consultancy. So we do both. But I think what really sets us apart perhaps is our really deep medical affairs heritage. So within the combined team today, and that team is growing as we speak, welcome Carol, we have more than 200 years medical affairs experience, and Carol being based in Canada, so we now have presence both in North America and within Europe, rest of world. Everything that we do at OneMSL is really driven by our desire, as you can see on the slide, to maximize the value and impact of the field medical function. And of course, that then contributes to the wider medical affairs team and those critical medical strategic objectives. So those are our drivers. Those are what get us out of bed in the morning and really energize us and bring us that buzz. So a little bit of history for you. So back in 2018, we launched the first MSL survey. And, you know, we were pretty excited. We had 231 participants from 18 countries. Why did we do it? We did it because I was invited to talk about the subject of MSL excellence at the first MAPS Europe conference. And I really just didn't want to talk about concepts and about my views and my opinions, because really people need to see evidence. So that was the background to the first survey. You might be interested to know that in 2023 in our survey, we had almost 600 respondents from 59 countries. And I'll give you a greater breakdown on that shortly. But what are the objectives and the impact of the survey? So what is it designed to do? So really, the survey is designed to learn about the reality, challenges and needs for not only MSLs, but also for MSL managers and medical affairs teams. And through those learnings and through those findings, we're then able to identify trends to support medical leaders. So they use the data very often in their planning and their prioritization. The findings help us really drive standards of excellence. What is excellence? So we can start to use some of these data to define excellence. And of course, as a training organization, the findings support us in the creation of new programs. So we really do listen to what people tell us. And this quote you see on the slide was from the survey this year. This was from a field medical excellence lead. He said, "Thank you so much. These findings are really invaluable for me in my role, in supporting me to make the right decisions for my team." So that's the background. And let's just stop for a moment and think about where we are in medical affairs. And there is just so much written about this, you know, whether we're seeing it in publications, whether we're seeing it within social media, whether you're hearing about it within your organizations. But you will know, as well as we do, that the spotlight is firmly on medical affairs today. It has been on the role of the MSL for quite some time, but this is a very fast moving space that we are all part of. And in particular, when we think about the MSL and we think about the origins of the role, this idea of being a scientific communicator, I'm sure that Carol and I will discuss this as we move through the webinar. That role is no longer the role of the MSL today. The MSL of today needs to have a much more sophisticated skill set, and really they need to be supported by the organizations in order to be successful. This is just a summary of some of those reports that we called out earlier, and this is really saying what do organizations need to think about if they want to have real competitive advantage. And there's a lot to consider here. And if you're interested in reading any of those papers, we've provided the references for you at the bottom of the slide. But the fact is that industry needs to consider a lot in order to best support its teams. So it needs to be really ensuring that it's attracting, onboarding, developing, and retaining the best people. It needs to be thinking back to Carol's point earlier about its tools, systems, and processes. It needs to be thinking about the way in which training is supported within a company, how it's identified, how it's delivered. And of course, thinking about those development opportunities that encourage individuals to stay. So there's a huge amount to consider. So before I move on, Carol, any thoughts from you at this point?
I actually think this is a great synopsis of the gap that probably exists in getting to this Vision 2030. I think that the speed of technology is changing at a huge rate. And our skills as field medical and medical affairs people oftentimes are not able to keep up with that change. If we think about data fluency and digital literacy, for an example, how do you keep up with something that evolves every month? But for me, I think that we have to start to look at our critical success factor in this as being how we invest in training and development. Because without that investment, how do you keep up with the speed of everything else that's happening? And I fear we may be falling behind there.
Fantastic. But let's now, just while you're thinking about everything that we're saying, let's just take a moment to look at the 2023 survey findings. And the first thing that we want to call out is that in the interest of time today, we're only going to be able to scratch the surface of these findings. So if you would like to access the full survey report, we've shown you here how best to do that. So first of all, go on to the One MSL website and click on the One Community. And then you'll see that you are able to register today. So that's step number one. And then within looking here on the left-hand side, you'll see that within One Community, you've got an opportunity to look at webinars, resources, which is where you will find the survey report. and the One Blog. All of these are provided free of charge, so you simply need to register and be part of the community if you're not already part of the community. There's also, just a bit of a plug here, a wealth of other resources that you might be interested in. So if you're not a One Community member, please go and sign up. So let's think about the 2023 survey. Who responded? Who was part of that survey? And as I said earlier, we were really excited to have respondents, nearly 600 respondents from 59 countries. And you can see the breakdown here of the various roles. So 2/3 were MSLs who were mostly field-based, and we had some who identified themselves. And of course, we understand that some hybrid roles do exist, that we may have individuals who might be head office-based. Some MSLs are in a player manager type role. About 10% were managers who had a dedicated role to managing MSLs, and we had 10% of those who had a medical role with some element of management responsibilities as part of their role. So a really interesting spread of respondents. And these were the locations. So you can see that this truly is a global survey. We have seen year on year an increase in the number of respondents coming from the LATAM region in particular. We see growth in Asia and Oceania. We, of course, not surprisingly, see a larger cohort coming from within Europe, but we're also really happy to have a really significant proportion of respondents coming from the US and from Canada. So the data is truly global in its nature. And in terms of organizations, you can see again that the respondents are coming from large right down to the startup biotechs. So it's really quite diverse. And you will all know, of course, that the role, the MSL role, will vary significantly according to organization size, according to life cycle stage, and so on. So this is just really creating some context for you. So these are the key topics in the 2023 survey to give you a sense of the breadth of the topics. As I said, we're not going to be able to do a deep dive into all of these questions, but we start by really establishing some background information around experience, about time and role, about management, about highest qualification, thinking about number of TAs covered, thinking about value and impact measures, looking at onboarding. So really trying to get a sense of what is the reality for MSLs. We then ask about stakeholder engagement. Do you have target numbers of stakeholders? Who is it that you're engaging with? How are you engaging? Thinking about channels. And of course, as we think, you know, we come out of the COVID era where virtual engagement is the norm really, but thinking about moving into the omnichannel area, thinking about competencies, we are going to do a deep dive into competencies today, and then thinking about in-role development. Those are the core topics that we talked about in 2023. Towards the end of the webinar, we will share with you the newer topics for 2024. So what are the topics that we've added in 2024? Carol, is there anything that you're particularly looking forward to exploring?
So for me, it's two things. It's field medical competencies, because I think that these are critical enablers, but also in role development. As we hire into the MSL role, we're hiring people from diverse but highly qualified backgrounds. And I can remember in roles where I've led organizations across the globe, that a critical thing, something that was pivotally important for a candidate as they joined a company, was what does in-role development look like at your organization? And I think these two things marry together very well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. So let's start with some data just for those of you on the line. So interestingly, when we think about the MSL as being a scientific expert, that's a reasonable expectation when we're working in one therapy area, because in fact, there may be multiple products within one therapy area. But, you know, as we start to look at these findings and we see that, in fact, 25% of MSLs are working in three or more therapy areas, that becomes really quite challenging, because it must be impossible to maintain a current level of scientific expertise when you are spread across three therapeutic areas. But this is their reality. So this is what they are having to deal with in the moment. Next, we look at life cycle stage involvement. And I hope that you can see from this slide that we're reflecting data here. The yellow bars reflect what we learned in 2019 and 20, coming through to the green from 2022 and the navy blue from 2023. And there's a really nice story that we're seeing here, which is over the 5 years or over this time period, we're seeing a significant shift in favor of MSLs being involved earlier in the life cycle. The fact that we have 10% of MSLs working at phase one in 2023. So almost a third working at phase one, phase two. And this, of course, was, what does this mean? This means that, you know, the capabilities and competencies required are going to be really very different. The conversations are different. The activities are different. The value and impact is different. Any thoughts, Carol, from you on this?
Yeah, I think your comment is absolutely spot on, Helen. You know, I think that the level of data dissemination that you are able to do, the level of data discussion, hard published data discussion, of course, as you get towards phase three and onwards, it's going to be more. So it means that you're really focused in very different ways of engaging your customer at phase one and two, and in supporting a lot of clinical operations, which are not always something that someone who comes brand new to the industry is fully aware of and comfortable with, which is why, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this as we go through, understanding what's required to onboarding MSLs is really important as you think about how many are involved. I actually think this number of 25% in phase one and two will grow as we move forward. I think we're going to see more field medical and MSL involvement in early stage clinical work than we do right now.
Absolutely, yeah, and we've done quite a number of programs of recent, really around, you know, elevating confidence to engage at this stage, and really thinking about, you know, there's a real fine balance there when MSLs are engaging early in clinical development in terms of really having clarity on the expectations of you and how you can most effectively work in collaboration with your colleagues, for example, within the CRO, within clinical operations internally, within the study site teams, you know, that really, there's a lot to consider there. So really refining and honing those skills is pretty pivotal, I would suggest. So here's a slide that I think will interest you, Carol, and I suspect it will interest many of you on the line. So the question that we asked, and it's interesting, the findings haven't changed significantly over time, but the question that is asked of the participants, who is your direct line manager? And these were the options that were given. And what we can see here is that in 2023, of almost those, all of the respondents, the 468 who answered the question, only 55% have a dedicated MSL manager. Now, we understand that, you know, in smaller organizations, probably from a resource perspective, it's not feasible. It's not possible if you're a small team to always have a dedicated manager. But for those that do not have a dedicated MSL manager, what do you believe the implications of that are, Carol?
So I've actually seen this across the globe in previous roles, I was head of global medical for field at Sanofi and had 47 countries in my group for GEM. I think that in some areas, there's a highly collaborative way of working. So whoever your manager is will really understand your role. But as your scale increases, you move into bigger countries. Without a dedicated manager, you can't rely on the person who is managing you actually understand what the role is. It's very different from an office-based medical advisor, and the level of travel and planning that goes into every KOL interaction can sometimes not be well understood. And if your manager doesn't understand your role, they may not understand what you need to be successful. So that's one example that I could give, Helen.
Yeah, it's clear in the slide that there are MSLs who, you know, that there's a director, there's a regional medical director. We do understand that language will, you know, terminology within the US, we have these regional field directors and so on, it may be different. But what I can tell you, and we're not going to show this today, Carol, but when we ask the managers what level of training they had had to support them in these new responsibilities, invariably the answer was none. So there are huge expectations of these managers. You know, they are juggling multiple priorities, and many MSLs are very capable individuals, but irrespective of where we are in terms of our experience, we can all benefit. Whether it's mentoring, whether it's coaching, whatever the need is, we all benefit from that. So the fact that individuals may be having to hold those responsibilities in the absence of the support and the training can potentially be a challenge.
It's also the time that the manager has to dedicate to the MSL and that team. Because if you have other responsibilities, if you're a medical director, you know, or if you're in a small country where you're also doing med info, being a medical director, working on pharmacovigilance, I've seen that, you know, someone being responsible and managing the MSLs, the percentage of their time that they're able to ring fence for those MSL activities is small. But it can become even smaller at times of crisis where field teams may need the most support from a manager. You know, if you have some kind of safety alert at product launch, you know, where there's a lot of activity, if your manager is being called away.
So let's now move on to stakeholder engagement. So we wanted to understand, does every MSL have a defined number of stakeholders that they're expected to engage with in the conduct of their role? And you can see here that for three quarters, the answer to that is yes, but for others, the answer is no. And, you know, why is it important that we understand that? Because very often when we think about, you know, are we being truly strategic? Are we engaging with the right stakeholders? Are we clear on who it is that we need to be engaging with? Unless this piece of planning has been done, or that there's some sense of the breadth of stakeholder groups that we need to be engaging with, then we may not necessarily be as optimally effective as we might want to be. And of course, what we're seeing, you know, we often hear people talk about MSLs only engaging with KOLs. We tend to use the term key external experts. But actually, when we think about the complexity of the external healthcare system today, the patient journey, there are so many touch points in that journey by so many different stakeholder groups. So is it possible to really say you need to engage with 40 or 50 and these are who they need to be? So I guess the, you know, the point of this finding is really to call out that for three quarters of MSLs, there is an expectation that they will engage with X, whatever X looks like. But then really getting teams to challenge themselves, are we absolutely engaging with the right stakeholder groups when we think about our strategic imperatives? So an interesting finding, which then really leads us on to thinking about how value and impact is measured within the organization. We've obviously written about this within our One Field Medical Excellence group quite recently. This is such an important conversation happening within organizations, is really thinking about how do we truly know the value of our field medical team? And this idea of simply using quantitative metrics, and not surprisingly, 75% of people say that quantitative metrics are being used. And we would argue quite strongly that those metrics do not tell the whole story. And if you look at the grey box on the right, you can see some other measures that are being used. And I think there are some nice examples here when we think about case studies, when we think about internal feedback, when we think about the cross-functional perspective. But for many organizations, there is still this expectation that quantitative and qualitative metrics will be the norm.
I was so grateful for the document they put out on metrics, because that was an enormous piece of work that really illustrated there are better ways to do this. I think it's important that we track quantitative metrics because it's a measurement of your muscle effort. And I think it also helps you to understand if your team is under-resourced, do you actually need more people to be able to achieve what you want to do? But I think there is a huge blend of understanding how you did something in terms of the quantitative, but the outcome of what it was that you did, and actually starting to build a storytelling, a narrative around what the target outcome was and how you achieved it. You know, when you're able to tell the story of what you've done, no one really wants to understand how many attempts it took you to achieve it. What they really want is the story of the success that you achieved.
Absolutely. So let's now get into field medical competencies. Two questions that were asked. On the left-hand side, you can see the question, which of the following knowledge topics do you believe should be included as part of onboarding? And this is what MSLs tell us. So this is, again, not us guiding them and directing them. This is what they're saying. And of course, many of these are what you would expect to see. But I hope that what this slide tells you is the breadth. And this will be familiar to all of you who are in role. There's, you know, there's an expectation what we need to know and what we need to do so that we can have the optimal impact is really very significant, because this is really thinking about it from a knowledge perspective. If we then overlay this with skills, and as we think about the evolving role and we think about the skills that are required today to be successful, you know, back in my day of being an MSL, the training that we had, surprise, surprise, was presentation skills. You know, we didn't talk about active listening, effective questioning, handling challenge, using challenge, whatever else. You know, it was very much a transactional, we are responding to a request for information. Yeah. So the MSL of today, this is what they believe that they need to know. And this needs to be covered within onboarding. This is what they're saying, not as they move through their journey, within onboarding.
Yeah. And I think there's a presumption sometimes, Helen, especially when you're hiring for not a new to industry MSL, I think there's a presumption that when you hire a senior MSL, someone that's coming with 2 or 3 years of experience, you assume they've done all of this. But what we're seeing quite clearly is that a lot of MSLs don't have full exposure to all of these onboarding topics. And I'm sure you'll go through the talk about role development as we go through this. But I think that every MSL, as they join you to a company, whether they're experienced or not, should have the opportunity to be able to say, here are the areas where I know I need more focus.
Well, and we are going to come to this, but you know, what was then interesting was, if you think about the fact that the respondents told us what they felt needed to be covered, and then we actually asked them, so how long was your onboarding? And you can see that for 42%, it was a month or less. So when we think about the scale of what it is that they feel that they need to know and to get their heads around so that they can go out and be truly effective. And for about a third, we have 3 months. And I think that 3 months is, in our experience, that is pretty much the norm. You know, the expectation that it will be 3 months before you are live in field. But we also hear of stories where people have less than a week. You know, here you go, you've joined the company, we need you to be out there ASAP. That creates a huge amount of pressure for both the MSL and risk, I would suggest, as well. The next question that we asked was, did you have a scientific knowledge review? So we know that scientific knowledge, of course, is foundational, but for a third of people, there was no post-onboarding assessment. So really, how do we know what level we're sitting at with respect to our confidence around the science? And then we're overlaying that with our ability to engage with impact. So we strongly believe in the value of onboarding programs, functional onboarding programs. This is not company mandatory corporate onboarding. This is true functional onboarding. And then the idea that you have some kind of a post-onboarding assessment to ensure that people feel confident to go out and do the job.
I can think of so many examples, both from my own time carrying a bag in the field, Helen, to managing MSLs as a direct manager, to leading huge teams, where I've heard MSLs say, I wish I'd had more exposure to preparing to engage for the first time. Because I think we recognise that it's actually really difficult to walk back from a bad first engagement. And I'm not saying that it happens all the time, but when it does happen, it can be really quite devastating because you've put a lot of effort already behind planning. And had you had the opportunity to fill any little gaps at that engagement skill assessment stage, it gives you an increased level of self-belief and confidence, but also I think it gives you the opportunity to plan and prepare in the very best way. So I wish more companies would do that engagement skill assessment.
In terms of competency frameworks, this hasn't really changed significantly over time, which from 66 to 75%, but I think what is changing is really the content. It's what is included within the competency framework. Of course, at the top, we see what we would expect. We see scientific knowledge, we see communication skills, we see collaboration. But you can start to see now that the competencies with respect to strategic thinking and acting, business acumen and leadership are starting to filter through into the competency frameworks. And I think that this is super critical because in this evolving world where we genuinely want to be recognised as a strategic partner, it's very, very important that we have the knowledge and the understanding and the acumen to really reflect those broader competencies.
Totally. I think it's pivotal because everything we hear these days is MSLs and insights, MSLs and insights. Without that strategic acumen, how can you become a real engine for insights? I think it's enabling in so many different ways.
Yeah. So for those of you that are on the line and you're thinking about your training needs and how you support the training needs of your team, this was the question that we asked, and I find this really, really fascinating. So for most people, it was an informal conversation between the MSL and the manager in terms of thinking about training needs. And only a third of people did they actually complete a training needs analysis. And there is just so much value to be gained from conducting a training needs analysis. You know, a self-assessed analysis, it gives the MSL the opportunity to reflect. But first of all, we have to show them what great looks like, because very often we say, what do you think your training needs are? But if in the absence of us defining what brilliant looks like, then it's actually really difficult to self-assess and say, actually, do you know, I think that I need support here, here, and here. Because the value as well of the training needs analysis is that not only can that inform your individual development plan, which can then be supported by your manager, but the training needs analyses can then gather data, which managers, excellence leaders can then review and use to identify where they are going to prioritize very precious training resources. You know, budget is hard fought for training, but in the absence of us really having the data to support what the needs are, then what we tend to do is we tend to sort of be a little bit haphazard about it, and for there not to be a plan that sits behind training. Would you agree, Carol?
Totally. And I think, I mean, this is a global survey, Helen, and I think something we must remember is in the emerging markets, sometimes this might be the first MSL team at a company. It might be the first MSL team in a country. And how can you know what good looks like? And as we think about having a conversation between an MSL and a manager, which is happening most of the time, we tend to focus on things other than needs. We focus on career drivers, things that will help us to accelerate to the next role. And we're not, as human beings, often able to be to have real clarity on what our needs are. So I think that having the opportunity to take a proper needs analysis survey, it takes away the guesswork and the self-analysis and actually puts some real criteria behind it. It can be a little bit uncomfortable for a lot of people to self-analyze what you need, but it's so valuable. Individually for your career, organizationally for your budget.
So having thought about how training needs are identified, again, this is of course of interest to us. Do you have access to specific training programs? And we're delighted to see that 2/3 of people do. But then clearly there is this, as you say, you know, there's a third of teams here, of individuals, respondents, who do not have access to MSL specific training programs. As we said at the outset, We have used many of these findings to inform our response and what it is that we do. So these findings resulted in the creation, for example, of our online academy. So how could we create resources that could really support self-directed learning? Because we know that resources need to be sustainable. They need to be high quality, but also cost effective. We're going to go on now to coaching and development and some final few slides here about the 2023 survey, and then we'll talk about the 2024 survey. So the question that was asked was, do you believe that in-field coaching is important? And not surprisingly, 84% of people said the answer to that was yes. I'm very curious about the 12% that said no. Well, what are your thoughts, Carol? Why do you think people might say no to that?
You know, I think we go back to the large quantity of MSLs who don't have a direct MSL manager, and it may be that. It may be the fact that your manager has so little focus on the MSL role or has no MSL experience, and that may lead to some kind of coaching disconnect where the advice that they're being given by their manager maybe isn't as relevant because they don't understand the role. So I think there's a tie here between the two things, Helen.
Then we ask a question within the survey about the number of coaching conversations that you've had with the manager or designated MSL coach. And of course, you know, coaching can mean different things to different people. And very often how we respond to these questions is based on our experience of what we believe to be coaching. Because for some people, coaching is a tell, but for others, you know, they really understand the true value of coaching. But nonetheless, this is really quite shocking, the fact that we have here over 50% of people, it's been three or less conversations over a 12-month period. And for those of you that have had a really impactful coaching conversation, you will know the value that can bring, you know, helping you to find your own solutions, giving you the opportunity for self-reflection, giving you the opportunity to think about what you might do differently, to think about your options. Coaching is, I have a coach. You know, I believe so passionately in the value of coaching, and yet for some reason this continues to fall off the radar. And again, I think we have touched on many of the points, but the data speaks for themselves, really.
Before we go on, I think you've given the opportunity to highlight so many areas where we can flip the switch and move to a different direction. And I'm new to Wanna Myself. So I guess what I'd like to do is hear your thoughts on how Wanna Myself can change that and challenge you a little bit. You've got all of this data. What are you going to do to flip the switch?
Well, I think we continue to talk about this, you know, in the conversations that we have with the companies that we support and the brilliant teams that we support. We talk about the breadth of these skills. We always build in, whether we're doing workshops or whether we're thinking about self-directed learning, we always add in tasks so that managers have an opportunity to continue to embed the learning through coaching and follow up. So we don't see training as a one and done. We see it as a continuous journey. So we acknowledge what we learn from the survey through the programs that we create, but we are constantly trying to reinforce the value of manager support. But we're also really passionate about enabling and empowering individuals to take control of their own development. We're not baby birds waiting to be fed. We're adults. So really think about how you can take your own personal development, how you can identify your needs, how you can really drive forward in terms of your professional development, and then what resources you need to support you. So I just think that hopefully by doing the surveys, by talking about future fit capabilities, by just constantly banging the drum, we are slowly, slowly making a difference. And that is really our mission.
Exciting.
The 2024 survey is now open. It has been open for a few weeks, and I think at the last count, we have participants from 40 countries to date. So it would be great to exceed our 2023 target, and we will continue to keep the survey open. But what is different, what we want to call out here is what have we added into the 2024 survey? And you can see that many of the core topics are the same, but we have added in, we've gone into a deeper dive into strategic thinking and acting. So really seeking to understand the role of MSLs with respect to planning, with respect to thinking about their long-term stakeholder plans, thinking about the training needs they may have around strategic acumen. Insights, you'll be pleased to know, Carol, is a new topic within the 2024 survey. So asking, really seeking to identify what experiences people have had, how confident are they, really seeking, we want to gather some feedback really on various aspects of insights, and also getting people to identify where they still feel that they might benefit from help, because this, not surprisingly, is one of the biggest asks that we have as a company, is really thinking about strategic thinking and acting, which includes insights. And then, of course, the other hot topic around omnichannel. So, you know, I think we're all still at the stage where we're trying to work out what that really means for medical affairs and what that means for MSLs in particular. So there are some new questions in there. Please do join us. We would really value your contribution.
In the meantime, while we wait, Helen, I guess what I would do is say there are lots of surveys out there right now. I mean, I've seen several links. There is nothing wrong with completing many, many surveys. I think the whole thing is the more data we have, the better. I think what is really amazing about your survey, though, is that it's been that you have so much historical data. And I would again challenge you to look at how can you do a retrospective analysis on what has changed over the years. I know I would love to see that. I think other people would get a lot of benefit from understanding have we moved on in 5 years and what has changed. I think that our younger MSLs bring into this role a great and different skill set than I brought to the role when I became an MSL. And I'm really excited to see what that means in terms of creating new, more dynamic training opportunities. And do you have anything that you would say about that? How can we move with the times and change with the generations for training?
Oh well, I mean, training has been transformed, and certainly the way, there's this whole emphasis on immersive training and blended training. So really thinking about, we all have preferences for the way that we want to be trained. So typically for us, any program, any workshop will be a blended training approach, and really thinking about how you really keep those resources accessible. We talked about the word sustainable. It's just very important. We learn every day, every conversation that we have, Carol, we are learning. We learn from our LinkedIn conversations, we learn from our company client conversations. So if there's anything you'd like to explore with us offline, please know that we're always open to the conversation. So on that note, I want to say thanks to Greg and to Jen in the background. Thank you so much. Huge thanks to you, Carol.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you to everyone for dialing in and for being part of the webinar. It wouldn't be the same without you. And until the next time, goodbye.